ball, ball. Everybody hit it on a hit it,
Welcome to Psych Talk. I'm your host, Jose Dras Lopez. And today we're going to talk about childhood and the power of play and music. And that's where that song came in. That was Rubber Biscuit by the Blues Brothers, chosen by our guest, who's Christopher Toler. He's a father and a licensed clinical social worker here in North Carolina. He spent 12 years working with young people in many settings. And he's the co-founder of a small nonprofit, Aiden's Angels Incorporated, in honor of his late infant son. So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And explain to us why I just played that. What's great about that song, or what do you like about it?
It's great because I like it, and my daughters like it, too. My daughters are about 1.5 and 5.5, especially the 1.5-year-old. She likes, I play that song in the car. She'll start humming and rubbing her finger against her lip, and it just creates a good time for everyone.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your family. You have two daughters, right?
Yes. And my wife, Latoya.
How old are your daughters?
1.5 and 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess I've always, probably since 6th, 7th grade especially, I've been really into music. And, you know, probably up until early 30s, music was one of the focal points of my life. You know, every day I woke up, kind of thought of one of the first things I would think of is, what do I want to listen to today? You know, what's gonna move me? And you know, obviously, having children changes you at least a little bit. But it's interesting when the older one was about maybe 3 months old, I was playing some music and she was crying. It was on shuffle, and then a song by, I don't know if you're familiar with a band called the Dropkick Murphys, Irish American punk band. A lot of loud bagpipes, and I realized the loud bagpipes made her stop crying. And several more times, it worked every time.
So is it the bagpipes or the volume?
Yes. You know, some parents will say that turning on a vacuum cleaner or turning on a bathroom fan helps a really small baby calm down, the constant noise. The sound of the bagpipe was just kind of, I don't know if grating is the right word, you know, because it sounds really cool. I don't want to downplay that, but it worked. I thought, wow, this is awesome. I figured this out. Obviously, there's many other things I have yet to figure out, and you know, parenting is learning as you go. But I thought that was really interesting. And then as she got a little bit older and would babble a little bit, I would kind of try to think of what songs kind of fit with her babbling, and songs like "Surfin' Bird" by the Ramones and other songs with kind of funny noises. Surprising, actually, how many songs there are with kind of funny noises that really work well for kids, and they're songs that that adults can often tolerate pretty well. You know, different from the traditional child-centric songs that maybe, you know, stuff like Barney that maybe parents get a little sick of after a while.
Right. I'm wondering how much sacrifice it takes to be the fun parent. And it sounds like you don't have to listen to Barney, but even if you're listening to the fun or goofy songs that are made by serious artists, do you still feel like you're making a sacrifice in your musical diet, say?
At this point, I really don't. There was probably a point where, when I first became a father, where I would kind of go through, like, you know, stuff that just, you know, maybe you outgrow or you realize, I don't want any kids to hear that. So, you know, you kind of sift through things. To be honest, kids are so rewarding in themselves that I never really saw it as a sacrifice. Although, you know, as another kind of aside, I can remember, especially when I first became a father, you know, I've always been into buying and trading things. Trading was always an important part of my collecting, and I got to the point where I was no longer really trading things for more music. I was trading things for a potty book or things like that, for kid-centric stuff. And it was really cool that I was, I guess in that way it felt like a change, but it didn't so much feel like a sacrifice. To be honest, it felt more like, hey, you know, I get to share something I'm into with my kids. You know, I bring them to the store with me, even when they were, you know, so small, I was carrying them, and I would trade my music and get them some books, and it just, just felt like I was carrying the torch in a different way.
Right. All right. So that you've set up the picture for your family life a bit. Now tell us about your work life and maybe how that overlaps with being a parent.
Well, I started working with young people, right when I finished. I have an undergraduate degree in English, and I started as a substitute teacher, right after I turned 22, and I always had the interest of working with young people. When I was working in the school system, I often found myself working in the middle school. I was certainly challenged by a lot of the behaviors, but about midway through that first year, there was an opportunity to be an aide in the special education department, and I got to work with some of the kids one-on-one, and that's what really sort of propelled me toward social work.
Tell me about some of the challenges of being a substitute teacher right out of school. That must be tough.
Yes, and I think especially because, you're young and the kids can tell you're young. And, I guess I can think of isolated examples where kids thought I was cool, whatever that means. And that maybe worked out for me a little bit. But by and large, I just didn't have the respect. And maybe at the time, I didn't quite know how to command the respect. Yeah, I had to be honest, I had a really tough time managing the classroom sometimes. And I do think a big part of it was they could tell I was young and, still finding my way. And then part of it may just be a personality thing. Maybe I'm better suited for smaller groups.
Right. Fair enough. Okay. So you said that school was eventually a bridge into something more like social work.
Yes.
And then tell me what you've done in your life as a social worker.
Well, I've...
Lots of outpatient work, right?
Yes. It's primarily been outpatient work. I have worked with people of all ages. It has... I do enjoy working with young people, and that always ends up being the majority of the work I do. Working with young people, a lot of times they're brought there by their parent. In fact, most of the times they're brought there by their parent. It wasn't their idea. And so it can be challenging to figure out, okay, I got this person sitting in my office. Their parent wants them to talk to me. They have some things apparently to work on. But how do I start the conversation? What do you do? And with children, very often, especially younger ones, elementary school, the answer is usually to find some sort of collaborative game to do, some way to play. And you try to go with what they're interested in. If they like drawing, you go with drawing. If they like writing rhymes, you go with that, and you just kind of see where it takes you, and kind of see what sort of ideas and feelings and themes come out.
So that idea of warming up to a child through play, sometimes it's called play therapy, right?
Yes.
And it's interesting because at the same time, it's still just play. It's still what you can do at home with your kid, and it doesn't need to be anything fancy, right?
Right. And I do think sometimes it's helpful to explain to parents what you're doing, because it can just look like, all right, why am I taking this person here to play with this person? And, try to emphasize that that's sort of the starting point. And to be honest, each therapist, kind of has their own way of doing things. Some therapists are exclusively play therapists. I would not put myself in that category. I kind of use it as a starting point, and then kind of go on and do other things. But it does often come back to that. And one of the and there are also different ways to play. Sometimes it can involve a fairly simple game. A game like Jenga is often helpful, especially for kids who are very energetic. It's a pretty straightforward game, but it requires a good amount of concentration,
right,
and kind of delicate balance. And you'd be surprised how quickly some really energetic young people can sort of calm down and focus. And even if it's only for a short period of time, I think that's really helpful.
So that gets at the fact that sometimes you have to be pretty tactical about matching the game to the child or to the situation.
Yes.
Every child is going to have different needs that would align with different games, right?
Yes, yes.
Is there ever a time when play or certain types of play would just be inappropriate? I know it's a blanket question, but maybe for a certain type of child, certain games wouldn't work.
You know, I can think of an example in particular where I had a parent ask me not to let a boy bring his... He would bring toys with him into the session, and she asked me to not let him do that because it was too distracting for him. And she had a point there, and I try to respect what parents say, and he was able to not bring them in, and we did other things, and it worked out fine. And I don't know that we would have necessarily, quote-unquote, failed if he had brought a toy in, but she knew the boy better than I did,
right.
and she had a point there. So, yeah, I think some things can be distracting to certain children. And other times you'll be surprised that... That something works as well as it does.
Chris, you recently wrote a piece on different ideas for play or moments of play, great ideas in play, and you posted a version on our blog at Psych Talk, at psychtalkradio.com. So I'd like to look through that a little bit. I have one in particular I want to single out.
Okay.
But tell us first why you came up with this list and what different ways it's useful or important.
Well, I think sometimes it can be challenging. I know it's there's certainly times where it's been challenging for me to... Okay, my kids are here. It would be nice if we could do something together. What do we do? And actually, in Carolina Parent, this I believe is the most recent issue because it had the column at the end was related to Father's Day, and the author was talking about how he's not a fun parent, that he doesn't know what to do except for sit on the couch. And I think a certain amount of it was tongue in cheek, that you know some parents can kind of be the Pied Piper. You know, go outside and all the kids are following them around. They seem like the most fun in the world. And for other people, it doesn't quite come as naturally. These are all things that the list that I wrote are all things that are, if not free, are very low cost. They're relatively simple. I know for me, I'm always, reading ideas. Arts and crafts in particular is not one of my strong points. And I'm always seeing things like, oh, wow, that would be really cool to do with the kids. But, you know, you could give me a week, all the supplies, and I still wouldn't be able to pull it off.
Right. Well, Chris, I really get a kick out of number four about voice recording. Would you mind reading that one for us?
Sure. So there are sites such as there's a site called SoundCloud, free program where you can record sound. There's also Audacity is another free program you could use. But I've recorded babies babbling, toddlers trying to remember lyrics, and shy preschoolers singing quietly. You can also mix it up and stage a type of interview or imaginary radio show. Of course, you don't even have to actually record it. Kids remind us that anything can be a microphone.
Now, Chris, I'd like to clarify. We actually are recording this, even though this is not just play, although I'm having fun.
Okay. It's good to know.
It's just a fun example because I think if you're not around kids a lot, you can forget that you can just put up a toy microphone to them and start having a fun sort of role play interview.
Right, right. And, you know, along those same lines, everything can be a cell phone too. You know, I can remember using bananas when I was a kid, but kids will block anything and it's interesting to see what kind of conversations come out.
So we have an example recording, right? That's pretty relevant to this?
Yes, yes. This is a 5-second recording, if you can indulge me. I'll explain why my daughter is singing about going to the park at the dump after.
We're going to the park at the dump.
So there we have it. That was very simple. And I actually put that on a mixed CD, again, using the free program SoundCloud. In Raleigh, one of the recycling places actually has a park at it. And I was surprised to realize this, and so sometimes, we go recycle things, and the cool thing about little kids is you can make, if you're passionate, if you're excited, if you make it sound exciting, they'll go along with anything. So my daughter was very excited about the park at the dump, and she sang it in a way that kind of, the melody almost sounds like it was borrowed from that Katy Perry song, Fireworks. So I don't know if maybe we owe Katie a little nod there, but
I don't think we'll have copyright issues on that one. I think that's fair use.
Yes, yes.
She's remixed it.
Yeah, yeah. So, and this is something that she probably first sang it a few weeks ago. I just recorded it recently. But it's the kind of thing when things are getting a little tense in the car, you know, we have two car seats, the booster seat and the car seat in the back. Sometimes there's a little slapping back and forth. If we just, it kind of helps us have a moment of serenity and get us recentered when someone just, you know, sings that quick line, going to the park at the dump. Even if that's not at all our destination, it's just one of those fun family inside jokes that, and again, you can do these kind of things pretty easily. And it's even, and they get a kick out of it, especially playing it in the car. It's fun for them to hear their own voice.
Great. Well, Chris, I'm going to play another song because we got so many options. I want to throw a few in. I'm going to play Banana by the Agrolites, and you can tell us the story behind that or when you usually play that. I hope I didn't cut out like the most fun part of the song or anything.
No, that's kind of how it goes.
Okay.
We definitely got the flavor of it. So, you know, a few things. It encourages healthy eating, so that's nice. My kids love bananas.
Oh, so they can sing the song every time they see a banana.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And, you know, it's, you know, sometimes you hear a band and you kind of think, or someone's voice, and you just think, you know what, they could kind of sing about anything. It'd be pretty cool. You know, so it's the Agrolites are a band I like a lot, and you know, every so often I get pleasantly surprised that a band I really like has done a kid's song. So I found that one. It fits perfectly. It sounds like their other songs, just a little different, theme there. And it's a lot of fun. The kids sing along.
Right. You also mentioned in your blog post that there you can look to internet radio, right? And there's some options there.
Yes. Yes. For example, a site like Pandora. You know, you can. Select and by the way, that's one of the sites where it's my understanding artists are compensated fairly. It's legit, it's legal, and fair.
You can even turn down the volume slightly on the ads.
Yes, exactly.
That's legal too.
Right, absolutely. But you know, you can. What I do, for example, is I'll put things like I think I have about 10 or 11, you know, stations programmed, and you can shuffle all of them. And so I'll do things like Motown Radio. Put some
Muppets.
Yes, Muppets. There's a Sesame Street one too, and you know, like instrumental funk. I put some instrumental hip hop on there. So stuff that there's not going to be any objectionable material. It's stuff that I like and mixed in with stuff that they like. And to be honest, I like Sesame Street. I like the Muppets. So it works out pretty well for all of us. And I think that's one of the important things because. You know, kids like repetition, and if you're going to have repetition, what better than things that everyone likes? You know, not that you can't, you know, it's good for everyone to compromise sometimes, and especially my 5-year-old will, she'll complain about the song selection sometimes, or she'll want to hear the same song over and over, and we have to balance that out. But I do think it's good to kind of, if everyone likes it, it's that much more fun.
Well, I'm thinking about the Muppets still. That's just that they're in my head now. And I'm thinking about movies because there was a Muppet movie recently. And it gets me to this broader question about technology and which types of play are more engaging or less engaging. So if you compare, say, playing a Muppet song and organizing an activity or dance around that versus, say, putting on the Muppets movie and sitting in front of it, do you feel like there's something worse about movies, that they're more passive, or they're just different?
You know, certainly movies have their place, and I had never seen Beauty and the Beast until I had kids, and I couldn't. I think we're off the charts now in terms of how many times I've seen that and Princess and the Frog. Movies have their place, but I do think I think right that being active, being up, because you're right, movies are passive, and sometimes you might need to get something done. Sometimes you might need a little bit of quiet time, and movies are good for that. But I think all things considered, I'll take a dance party over a movie most days.
Right. Now, how about video games? They seem like they're a little in between potentially.
You know, I've the 5-year-old. I've tried playing Wii with her a couple times, and she just hasn't quite grasped it. And then as far as computer games, she has a Muppet game that I think is from the late 90s that still works mostly. And it, you know, it teaches same and different and letter identification and stuff like that. She's maybe played that 4 or 5 times. So for me personally, I think a little bit of that is good in moderation. It teaches, you know, she is going to need to learn how to use a computer, and she kind of has an understanding of what the mouse does and how to get things to go. But I, at the same time, it's, for me personally, it's not something that's been a big part of our lives.
That's fair. Yeah. I could just see in the future that video games would somehow be incorporated into social work. And maybe it Absolutely. Could be using the Wii, which is you might be moving around, yes. swatting a tennis ball, a virtual tennis ball.
Yes.
Or the Kinect for Xbox, mm-hmm. where it has a camera that can sense what you're doing so you can dance with it or whatever else.
Right.
So a little different than the old clicking with a mouse
yes.
type of game.
Yeah, I think there's definitely room for that. You know, especially things where you can collaborate. I remember, you know, when I was a kid, a lot of the old Nintendo games, they would involve you watching your friend play for, you know, an hour. And so it was a little more passive. This is there's more stuff where you're getting up and moving around, and it's a little more interactive.
Right. Well, you mentioned your daughter's Muppet game has a sort of educational aspect, uh-huh. like same different colors. And you can also get that through play, right? So
yes.
do you want to pick out maybe a couple of your suggestions that do that, like the alphabet games, for example?
Yes, the alphabet games, you know, and you can improvise, you can kind of, anything can be an alphabet game. You know, I guess one of the classic ones would be you're driving in the car trying to keep everyone occupied and not whining or hitting
Are
each
other.
Are
we there yet?
Yes, exactly. You know, find something that begins with the letter A or the letter C, or
so looking out the window. Those
yes, points yes. If they're not old enough to do that, things that asking them what they notice and then kind of going through what letter that might begin with. For the 5-year-old, she ends up with a lot of artwork everywhere. And one of the things we did that I thought worked well is, and I didn't worry about going through the alphabet and having one representation for each letter. But for example, if she had drawn a picture of a flower, put a big letter F on it, F is for flower. And we put them all in a book. So not only did it organize her artwork, because when things end up, you know, I think parents have probably experienced this, things end up on the floor, torn up everywhere. And it's just, you know, aside from making a mess, you maybe don't need every single thing your child does, but it is nice to have a record of things they've done and be able to go back to that. And so in trying to both organize and be educational, we labeled a lot of her pictures. Some of them we just left alone. You know, not everything has to have a concrete purpose, but it Right. did. It was and anything that involves cutting and gluing, she likes and a lot of kids like. So,
do you ever come to a point where you have to be careful about safety with games? I'm thinking about the cutting. Is that like the most dangerous thing that you'll ever do when you're playing or doing arts and crafts?
Well, in terms of sharp things, yes. But, you know, when you have kids, they're always finding new... Wow, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think about the dangers behind that.
Well, that's good in some sense. You're not one of those paranoid types who's not going to let children have a childhood, right? But there's something at the other end, too, a legitimate concern, right?
Yes. And with scissors, we did wait until, you know, and she started off with the child-safe scissors, you know, very, very rounded at the end in plastic. And she still doesn't usually use the really big scissors. But I guess it also depends on, you know your child. You know how impulsive they might be. And you know, certainly there are times where I have to, if she's overly rambunctious, I may have to say we're putting away the scissors because, you know, the old adage, you don't run with scissors.
Right,
you
know? Right, right. Well, how about in your social work? Do you ever have clients, children, who seem like they might be about to swallow something they shouldn't or something like that?
You know, I've, for the most part, I've avoided that. I actually... You know, the only thing I can think of is was actually a teenager, and he was just being really oppositional, and he took he tried to put some piece of some sort of electronic device in his mouth and chew on it. That was very odd, and that was him, you know, sending me a message that he didn't want to be there and that he wasn't going to listen, and that sort of thing. And needless to say, it wasn't a very long session, but I guess in part I try to not have too many distractions out during a session. So part of it might I just may have lucked out in that regard, but I try not to keep too many hazards around, though. You know, like I was saying at home, anything can become can become a hazard if someone's trying hard enough.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting that you can vary how structured play is or how unstructured it is. And one extreme is to just let children free play, right? To sort of leave them alone and watch.
Right.
I'm sort of curious what you see and what you learn when that happens.
Well, you definitely, you get all the themes, I guess, going around in their subconscious. You know, you see little stuffed animals being put in time out. You hear all sorts of stories about princesses and frogs and things that you know maybe may have been gotten from movies or TV. You know, it's great, and it makes you it makes me realize how great you know the unbridled imagination of a child can be. You know, we kind of lose that a little bit as we become adults, or in some cases a lot. And it's nice to get in touch with that again. You know, there's the Bob Dylan line, "I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now." And, you know, that kind of strikes me a lot, that certainly it's great to be an adult, it's great to have your independence, but we do often get caught up in things that maybe aren't the most important things that we should be focused on. And sometimes the purity of what children do and the way they play is a good thing to be reminded of, to not take yourself so seriously. And you know, children can bounce back. You know, they're so resilient; they can bounce back so quickly. It's just it's a great thing, and I think it's something we can learn from them.
So how does that change how you look at or interact with adults? Are they just boring and brittle?
No, I wouldn't say that. Although, you know, there are times where I realize, wow, I really haven't talked to an adult much today. It maybe has gotten me away from I don't know, trying to sound too. Too official, too smart, you know, just kind of, you know, sometimes, especially when, you know, those of us who've gone to school for maybe longer than normal people should go to school, you know, you get kind of caught up in the
seriousness and
yes,
the gravity
yeah.
of it.
Uh-huh. And it can kind of become, I know at least in academic environments, it can kind of become a pet. Competitive and people trying to one-up each other, and people saying things in complicated ways that maybe they don't need to, and I think it's I hope I never did that too much, but you know I do think that you get caught up in things sometimes, and you know it's really often the simple pure things that are the most meaningful.
Yeah. So kids can teach us a lot. I want to explore more what we can teach kids too, but first I'd like to play another song. Sound
sure.
good? Sure. All right, so this is Sing a Happy Song by War. The first thing you have to tell me is what era is that?
It's from the 70s.
The 70s.
War is the band that did "Why Can't We Be Friends," "Lowrider."
Okay.
Yeah. So they have a number of fun songs, their songs kind of run the gamut. Some of their songs are very serious, but that's just a great. You know, I think it's a great song for everyone. You know, kind of wake up with a song in your heart and. I guess, again, going back to kind of simple and pure things, I think the best thing we can do is try to spread joy. And I think children are a great reminder of that. You know, there's so many serious things to worry and real things to worry about as an adult. I think it's good to have moments of joy.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering about different genres of music and, mm-hmm. and which genres bring joy to which kids. My intuition would be that whatever you play for a young child, they can warm up to, and that you're sort of influencing what they'll like.
Yes.
But when do you get the sense that you're getting feedback in the other direction? Like they have they were almost born with a preference for a certain speed or style of song.
What I notice the most when they don't like a song is it's because it's after a song they like much better. So it's not necessarily that they hate the song that's playing. It's, no, I just want to hear the song before that again. They resent the current song for existing in place of the previous song. I can't think of a whole lot of times where I got loud boos from the crowd for a particular a genre. I do remember, I don't really have too many country songs, but I did at one point.
Good choice.
At one point, I don't know if you're familiar with the song I've Been Everywhere by Johnny Cash.
I think I've heard it, yeah.
He basically lists off a number of places, of cities, and I actually thought my kids would like it because he's just rattling off all these cities and good geography lesson, a bunch of rhymes. But my 5-year-old, maybe she was even 4 at the time, said something to the effect of, "Are we on a farm? Like what is Dad? What is this?" So I guess that was a, "Hey, what are you doing here?" But so that one, I guess, would be one that didn't go over quite as well.
Yeah, I was kidding about the good choice, no country. I think it's nice to be at least acclimated to most genres.
Right.
I guess there, you have to draw maybe the line at angry rock or rap with lots of cursing in it, or do you draw any lines?
I keep things PG rated and family friendly. Bands that I like such as the Beastie Boys, that would, a good percentage of their catalog I would not play in front of my kids. They have a song called Alive in particular that kind of basically expresses the idea that if you learn to love, you might love life. Again, just kind of the same idea, spreading joy, spreading love. And, that's a really good message. And that song doesn't happen to have any swear words in it. So that's one that I'll play. And so even bands which may have some quote-unquote objectionable material for really little ones, a lot of times you can find they have moments where it's kind of a universal family-friendly song that right. everyone can enjoy.
I'm thinking about the level of media access that kids these days have and uh-huh. how easy it is to just download a free song from iTunes. And I think it's going to be harder and harder for parents to censor everything their child listens to on the radio or on their iPod or
right.
wherever else. And so I wonder what your thoughts would be about having a client come in, like a parent with her 11-year-old, and she says, "I don't really want him listening to Eminem, but he can find it anywhere, and I can't really stop him." Or maybe one of your daughters starts listening to something that falls into the objectionable zone.
Yes.
What would be your reaction to that, or what steps might you try?
Well, I guess in an extreme case, if it's happening all the time, and the child is just, in some cases, the child will just be blaring it throughout the house, just like, "This is what I'm going to do. You can't stop me."
I have a neighbor like that.
Right. The parent is certainly always free to unplug the computer, disconnect the modem, what have you. For here and there, it's probably, kind of a, again, depending on the age. If it's a 5-year-old, playing Grand Theft Auto, then you might have to just say no. I know that's a video game, but I actually did have that come up.
Maybe that's even worse because it's the difference between just having violent or aggressive or bad influence lyrics and seeing it acted out visually.
Right. And I've had parents say that they don't like the language their child's using. And again, this is talking about pretty young children, early elementary school, feeling like it's coming from music. I really think, so again, in some situations, if it's extreme, you may have to limit the access they have to media. But I think also with some things, especially if you can tell it's really just for shock value, trying to ignore it, trying to present alternatives, that often works out pretty well.
And so there's a danger of overreacting.
Yes, yes, because then you make it a power struggle, and then they jump in. No, I'm really going to do this, and I'm going to find every single way I can to do this. You know, and I think, you know, even there are even some, like, I think of, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, maybe it was a little bit more, when Marilyn Manson came out, a lot of adults had had some concerns about some of the messages that were being expressed there. And I think in some, to some degree, they gave, if their objective was for kids to not listen to that, well, they gave him the best endorsement, the best advertisement in the world. We don't approve of this. This is bad. This is wrong. And so it kind of, oh, so you mean if I want to rebel, all I have to do is listen to that? You know, so I do think, right, there's a, I think that, again, in some cases, some of that is people trying to take a really hard stand actually has the opposite effect of what they were originally intending.
Right, right. There's, you can do things to create rebellion that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Right, right.
Well, just as a complete side note, I saw an interview with Bill O'Reilly and Marilyn Manson, mm-hmm. and I was just surprised at how reasonable they both were in an interview setting. I had my stereotypes for both of them, like
right.
conservative commentator who uses, I don't know, Weasley arguments, and someone who advocates suicide or satanic things or who knows what.
Right.
And they both were completely normal people in the interview. And I would say parents who are scared of Marilyn Manson would be interested or somewhat soothed to see the human being behind the image that he curates and,
right.
on his albums.
I think it is important to remember. I remember when I was younger, my dad would tell me that about Alice Cooper. You know, Alice Cooper would do some shocking things, but, you know, he'd tell, you know, that guy's a businessman. And I think to a certain degree, you know, a lot of what we see is really theater. And, you know, in both radio and in music, being controversial is what sells, is what gets you an audience. So, yeah, sometimes you see the real person, quote unquote real person, behind the public figure, and it can be really interesting and really different from what you'd expect.
Right, and there's a lesson that's something adults can point out to children over time, like, you know, you don't have, if you admire Lady Gaga, you don't need to wear a meat suit or
right, right.
you can help stop bullying, because that's what she does in her real life when she's not preening her image as
right.
the radical.
Right. And you know, it's confusing being a young person, and sometimes you think, well, the way to be an individual is to follow someone else who's seen as an individual, as unique. You know, when it comes down to it, obviously there's no substitute for just being yourself, and it can be a long journey figuring out what being yourself means. But
yeah,
it's different for everyone.
Well, I want to continue on this thread of adults teaching children a little more, because from a certain angle, from the sort of serious, stuffy academic angle, it can be a big responsibility to have any sort of charge over a child as a parent or
yes.
as a therapist, social worker. And part of it is because, well, if you're a social worker, they might be coming to you with emotional issues that could affect them their whole life. But regardless of their psychological state, there's also just the malleability of children.
Yes.
I mean, you're influencing their politics, their religion, what they're going to learn and be educated about, their sort of morals,
uh-huh.
how are you going to help them overcome selfishness. And how much weight does that have on you? Do you feel like that? Do you have a moment where that makes it less fun to be with kids because you have some kind of obligation to teach them something specific?
You know, with the children I work with, it's a lot of that is not my role. Certainly, there is a role of values and trying to help them understand, you know, basic things about respecting other people and being nice. You know, at home, it is a little more complicated, and you do worry about. You know, what am I teaching them? Am I teaching them the things I think most importantly, it's am I modeling the behavior that I want them to display? And I think that's a really important thing to remember that, you know, and certainly many other people have pointed this out. But, you know, you can come up with all the rules you want for children and all the expectations and give them all the lectures you want. But when it comes down to it, they're going to be, to a good extent, the way you are. If you're stressed all the time, they're going to be stressed all the time. You know, if you tend to raise your voice and get worked up over little things, they're going to do the same thing. And it's certainly easier said than done. And you know, I say these things and I do a lot of self-reflection and you know, these are things that all of us work on, you
right.
know, regardless of whether we have a child whose behavior is, you know, out of control or someone who's just going through the normal ups and downs of childhood.
So it's worth trying to be a slightly better role model, even if we're not perfect.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that I don't know if you've heard any of those public service announcements they're done by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for being adoptive parents. I believe it's specifically to teens. Basically, I think it's really well done. It lists off all these personality flaws, annoying personality traits, I guess I would say. You know, flaws is a subjective thing. You know, biting your nails, things like that. And that if you do all these things, you'd be a perfect parent, you know? And I think that's such a, I really like the way that's presented because all of us are flawed. And I think when we're honest about that, I think when we're honest about, well, for me personally, when I'm honest about that, it's easier for me to help other people and not sit up there as I'm this expert, you know, other people don't know what they're doing. It's far from that. It's a learning process for everyone. Certainly I feel that there's knowledge that I can impart to people and ways that I can help them approach problems differently. But of all the things to be an expert on, you know, human behavior, child behavior, that's, you know, we're all learning every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still thinking about that role model thread and I'm starting to think about a comment about what happens when an adult is dealing with their own demons and how that can affect the child. And it seems to me that in some sense, one really important thing a parent can do for a child or an adult can do for children around them is to seek help when they need it as individuals, as adults. I'm thinking, for example, if an adult has some eating issues and maybe is the sort who will sort of, without realizing it, make lots of comments about food and weight and I'm getting fat or whatever else,
right.
Then that's the sort of thing kids will soak up and start to internalize themselves.
Absolutely.
So I've seen examples of that in my life. That's why I'm bringing up sort of that morbid example. But it just goes to show that everyone's health is related.
Right. I have met quite a few people, quite a few adults who were initially motivated for treatment by, I'm afraid of what this will do to my kids, or, you know, this is not the person that I want to be as a parent. So, you know, that it is very important. And, you know, fortunately, children can help motivate people to get treatment.
Right. They can bring out the better side of anyone.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll have to look up that commercial you're talking about, the Department of Health and Human Services. If you bite your nails, you're the perfect parent.
Yeah.
What other examples did they give in that? Do you remember?
The radio version, I'm not quite remembering. They also have a TV version where the parent accidentally vacuums a guinea pig. The guinea pig lives. The commercial ends with it hopping away. I think it's a guinea pig. Some sort of rodent type pet. But, you know, just the idea of, look, she made a mistake, the vacuum exploded, but everything turned out okay, and, you know, it's part of family life. Not, you know, obviously you want to be careful when vacuuming around small animals, but, you know, we all make mistakes, and that don't feel like you have to be perfect.
Right. All right, ready for another song?
Yes.
I'm starting to see that you like reggae, ska, Jamaican
yes.
sort of stuff.
Yes, yes. My wife is actually from the Caribbean, and you know, my kids are biracial, and I try to expose them to a variety of things, and we all like it. It's very fun. That song in particular, that was Amy Winehouse.
Monkey Man by Amy Winehouse, right?
Yes, yes.
I'm surprised. That doesn't sound like the Amy Winehouse I'm used to.
Right, yeah. It's I guess it was kind of one of her B-sides. It's among other places, it's from the soundtrack Run, Fat Boy Run, if you've ever seen that movie. That's neither here nor there, but it's a fun movie. Yeah, it's a cover of a classic reggae song by Toots and the Maytals, another band that all of us like. But I was actually listening to the podcast of your your show on addiction, where you at the beginning, you know, touched on Whitney Houston and Amy Winehouse. And my kids love the I. They especially the 1.5-year-old. She sings along with that.
Fun. I think this would be a nice time to mention a bit about your nonprofit and sort of the story behind that.
Yes.
Aiden's Angels.
We had a son in between the two girls. And to be honest, I hope I'm able to talk about this. He lived 3 days, and he had brain malformation. And actually, if you don't mind, if you could...
Play the song.
Yes.
This is The Warrior's Code by Dropkick Murphys.
You know, I think that's an example of music kind of helping me get centered again. That's a song that I actually I listened to in the hospital. Warrior's Code by Dropkick Murphys. You know, again, they were the band with the bagpipes that stopped the babies from crying. And you know, it's a song about a lion-hearted boxer, and you know, I think this happens a lot when you lose a child, you know, regardless of the amount of time they were with you, you interpret the meaning of their lives. And for us, even though he was only with us 3 days, he hung on. The last night was kind of a slow motion night, and he hung on, and despite not having enough brain matter really to keep himself breathing and going, and somehow his heart kept on beating for, you know, maybe another 10-12 hours longer than expected, and so that's the we think of him as you know, with the image in a lion, and that song being a fighter makes me think of him. So my wife and I started a nonprofit called Aiden's Angels. And I actually, you know, I talked about my interest in music. I actually started out as, I started out selling our music collection, at least a good part of it. I haven't sold all of it. And I certainly want to keep some of it because, you know, my kids like it. You know, with the idea that, wow, wouldn't that be the most, you know, the most radical idea for a record store, one that exists, you know, to give back, to do good. You know, not that there aren't, you know, there's plenty of businesses that do good, but, you know, with the idea that that's exclusively what we're for. And we did that for a little while. We had some generous donations of music. What ended up happening was, you know, these days, CDs and records, for the most part, the value has gone way down. And it's tough to run a small nonprofit, you know, selling things for, you know, a really low cost. So what we ended up, you know, trying to make 50 cents a piece and trying to get rid of things that maybe no one wants anymore. So that was a great starting point, the record store. What we ended up doing was, you know, just now we mostly just do cash donations. The two most recent things we did, actually last Friday, we brought books to the Duke Children's Health, the Duke Children's Hospital, and 20 copies of the book, The Crown on Your Head, which is a beautiful story by Nancy Tillman, the idea that every child is born with a crown on their head, and that's what makes us unique, that every child has value, has something to teach us. And we gave money for families with babies in the neonatal intensive care unit to meal vouchers. You know, it's the last thing that we would want people to worry about when they're visiting their sick child in the hospital is food to eat and things like that. And you know, we've gotten pretty good feedback from the social worker at Duke. We did the same thing in December, actually in honor of what would have been Aiden's third birthday. We actually gave books, and that was a little more elaborate, baskets of helpful baby items, meal vouchers, gas cards, you know, things that we try to give things that are supportive, but also practical.
Right.
You know,
let's say listeners want to get involved or want to learn more. Where can they find out more?
The easiest thing to do is to go to Facebook and just look up Aiden's Angels. And our logo is Aiden's Angels with it's a black and white drawing with wings. And that's the easiest place to find us. We do a blog, too. The blog is connected to Facebook. So
Aiden'sAngels.tumblr.com, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like what you're doing is great. I'm just wondering, is it something that is being worked on nationwide, or is this still pretty local?
It's very much a local thing. I was fortunate enough to I grew up in Connecticut, and one of my friends from Connecticut is on the board, and he works for a large restaurant chain, and he got, you know, and these are people who don't live in the same state and have never met me, and we got. Back in the beginning, we got a very large amount of. The wheels in my car were rubbing from all the donations of records, DVDs, CDs. So in that way, it's branched out a little bit, but by and large, it has been a local thing. You know, it's something that, because we're small, all the money goes directly to our projects. We don't have. I haven't invested any money, and we don't pay anyone, and I haven't invested any money in a website or anything. We just use social media and, you know, kind of get straight to the point and make the stretch the dollars as far as we can.
Yeah, well, we're pretty much out of time.
Okay.
So just, do you have one final thought about what your hope is for Aiden's Angels?
With not only what we do, but with the blog and with social media, we're trying to connect with people, and we're happy to hear stories and share stories. And I've read some great blogs by there's a great network of parents out there, so there is some support out there, both in groups in your community and things online.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Chris Toler is a licensed clinical social worker here in North Carolina and a proud father. We talked about the power of play and music, and also about his nonprofit, Aiden's Angels. You can look up his nonprofit, Aiden's Angels, on Facebook or on the blog, aidensangels.tumblr.com. Thanks.
You're listening to Psych Talk.